two black-robed night sisters were standing on the rocks below. He shouted in warning, and one turned, readying a spell. Luke fired. She stood as if angered, flames smoldering from her cloak, and he realized that the force must be strong in this one. The other ran off into the haze. The lone witch stood her ground. Gazarian pulled back her hood. Her glowing red eyes were wide with surprise.
"So, we meet. I've always wanted to meet a Jedi."
"I've met your kind before," Luke said. "Listen to me, Gazarian. Turn away from the dark side before it is too late."
"Pardon me if I say I don't find you very impressive, young Jedi."
She pointed a finger at Luke, and a ripple of force slammed into him. White lights exploded behind his eyes, and the right side of his face felt as if it had been smashed by a hammer. Luke realized distantly that Gazarian's spell had ripped open blood vessels in his brain, and he was about to die, one among hundreds of fatalities on this battlefield. Isolde hurried to grab the new sensor array window. Chewbacca, perched on the ship's exterior, was already using the power wrench to pull off the old window, while Leia and Han labored in the cramped space of the Falcon's hold to get the generators in place. The droids were inside the ship, dumping coolant for the hyperdrive. Outside the fortress, a war was in full swing. Inside the sealed room with only one door to guard, Isolde felt protected, and he and Chewie had their backs to the door.
"Gazarian, I found them!"
the voice came from behind them. Isolde spun, dropped the array. A Night Sister stood in the doorway, panting. Isolde pulled his blaster, fired, and the Night Sister waved the blaster bolt away.
"Well," she said, "you're a pretty one. I think I'll keep you."
Chewbacca leapt at the Night Sister, and she backed up a step. Chewie dodged aside as if to pass her while retreating from the room, and the Night Sister lurched back. The Wookiee had snatched off the Night Sister's arm so fast that Isolde had never even seen it. She gazed at the bloody stump of her shoulder, and Isolde fired again. The Night Sister went down. Chewbacca began looking frantically on the floor. Even though Isolde didn't understand Wookiee, he realized that Chewie had dropped the bolts. "Go inside and get some more," Isolde shouted. "Hurry!" Chewbacca scrambled to the Falcon. Isolde followed him up the gangplank. The stone walls burst open as if a giant fist had slammed against them. Isolde put his hands over his head to shield himself from the falling rock, and a swirling hurricane of choking dirt and smoke whipped through the room. And in that moment, he knew that Rell's prophecy would come to pass. If he stayed here a moment longer, he would die. Isolde ducked under the Falcon, rolled away, and made a run for the door, hoping to reach safety. A Night Sister came through the door to meet him. She held up her hand, and an invisible force hammered into him. Tenennial rushed down a winding stairway, following two of the sisters. She heard screaming within the fortress, children shrieking in terror. Suddenly, one of the clan sisters shouted in horror as her head twisted around sharply, snapping her neck. The second sister, Minneteth, stopped and pointed a blaster, waiting for someone to come up the stairwell. But a madness took Tenennial, and she sent a wind screaming through the stairwell. Below her, the Night Sister shouted in dismay. Tenennial rushed down around the corner, saw two Night Sisters clinging to the handrails in order to avoid being swept downstairs. A black rage filled her mind, and Tenennial pounded the hags with the force wind. The Night Sisters went shrieking into oblivion, bouncing down the winding stairway. She let the wind fade, and Minneteth sat hunched on the floor, looking up at Tenennial's face in fear. "Your face," she whimpered. "You've burst a vessel." Tenennial stopped, touched her cheek, felt the tender bruise beneath her eye, the mark of a Night Sister. Her mind reeled at the thought, and she realized that she'd murdered those Night Sisters in rage. She turned and ran blindly upstairs to the upper chamber where the Falcon was stored. 12 hooded Night Sisters huddled there, muttering their spells, hands outstretched. They had torn the north wall asunder, and the cracked stone opened into the maelstrom. Into the storm, the Night Sisters sent the Falcon, floating on a field of force. On the far side of the room, a lone Night Sister crouched over the still form of Isolde, binding his wrists, unable to resist the impulse to steal such a handsome slave. Tenennial backed against the wall, thinking she could not fight so many, and if she tried to stop them from stealing the Falcon now, breaking their concentration on the spell, the ship would simply fall over the cliffs. Despite all her power, she could not manage to save such a heavy ship. Her only hope was that Leia and Han were all right, hidden inside the ship. She reached out with her mind, calling for Leia. Please, fire your engines. She inhaled deeply and ran through the room and channeled the force to the unconscious Isolde, using it to levitate him. She bowled his captor aside, grabbed him, and leapt against the stone wall, shielding Isolde with her body. The Falcon's engines flamed, filling the room with white fire. The Night Sister shrieked in the inferno, but Tenennial channeled the force, letting the flames flow around her. The Falcon shot off through the clouds of brown smoke. Leia piloted the Falcon through the dust and swirling debris of the Force Storm. The flashing lightning from the static electricity, the soot and accumulated garbage in the sky was all she had to protect them from being detected by Zinj's warships above the atmosphere. Han took the co-pilot seat and they headed low over the valley. Just ahead at the limit of vision, a dozen Imperial walkers and perhaps 24 Night Sisters marched down a wooded road. "Boy, I hate messing up a good road," Han said as he launched his proton torpedoes. The torpedoes blossomed into a field of white. A sonic boom shook the ship, echoed between the hills over and over. When the light faded enough so that Leia could see, gravel and soot began raining from the sky, long trails of debris that glittered in the morning sun. The Force Storm was over. Han's torpedoes had taken out some of the Night Sister's major talent. For one moment, Han thought he'd won, and he laughed, reveling in the victory. Then the darkness blossomed. On the far horizon, a circular black spot appeared. Then another beside it, then another, as if the sky had been lit with 10,000 glow globes and someone suddenly was switching them off. Within 30 seconds, the Millennium Falcon was hovering beneath a sky void of light. Only flames from burning fields and crops illuminated the ground below.
"Oh, King Solo, help!" 3PO shouted. "My photoreceptors are registering a most startling phenomenon. Dathomir's son appears to be going dead."
"Hey," Leia said, "what is this?" "Something far beyond the power even of the Night Sisters," Han answered, looking up at a ceiling of perfect night.
They returned to the fortress where grim-faced men milled about, torches in hand, staring at the total darkness with trepidation. Han and Leia hurried upstairs. They found Isolde stunned but unhurt. Tenennial was doing healing work on the only Night Sister to have survived the Falcon's blast, but Ogwin told them Luke was missing.
"Han," Leia said, "I can't feel Luke's presence anywhere. I have to go look for him."
"You can't," Isolde cut in. "It's too dangerous out there right now. Just because Githerian has left, it doesn't mean that the others have gone."
Ogwin limped over to the crack in the stone wall, searched the sky fearfully.
"Few of our common folk were hurt, and for that we can be grateful. I fear that this darkness is all that saved us. It turned back the Night Sister's attack."
R2 appeared in the doorway and swiveled his eye around. Han asked,
"What's up? Did you get any readings on what's causing the darkness?"
R2 raised up on his wheel pads, leaned forward, and showed a split-image hollow.
Githzerian stood gazing up at her hollow camera. "Zinj, what is the meaning of this?"
She indicated the sky.
Warlord Zinj, a pudgy human, was reclining in a large captain's chair. "Greetings, Githzerian. So good to see you again after so many years. This darkness is my gift to you. It's called an orbital night cloak. Thousands of satellites chained in a network, each designed to distort light, bending it in toward the satellite. It's quite a marvelous toy."
Githzerian glared at him, and Zinj continued,
"You told my men that you had Han Solo. You will release him to me today. If you do not, the night cloak will remain in place and Dathomir will begin to cool. In 2 weeks' time, the temperature will drop to 200 degrees below zero. You and everything on your world will die." "You are at war with the New Republic. It is a foe so widespread that you cannot defeat it. I have foreseen it. Therefore, perhaps you would consider giving us access to travel to New Republic worlds. There the Night Sisters would carve out a niche for themselves, carving into the heart of your enemies, never to bother you again."
"That is an intriguing offer. How many of your sisters would need transport?"
64.
"How soon would you be able to leave?"
"In 4 hours.
"We will work the exchange this way. I will drop 2 transports on your grounds in 4 hours. One ship will be unarmed, the other will be armed to the teeth.
You will bring Han Solo to the armed transport alone.
The transport will depart with Solo, and you will then be free to board the remaining ship and leave for a destination that I will choose. Agreed?
After a moment of reflection, Githzerian nodded.
Yes, yes, that would be quite adequate.
Both holograms faded.
Maybe Zinja's bluffing, Isolde said. He's built his orbital night cloak, but those satellites up there would be pretty easy to knock down.
You're right, Leia agreed. What did Zinj say? He called it a chain of satellites.
Meaning it can be broken, Han said. You shoot down one or two satellites and the system could collapse.
I could go up and knock out some satellites with my fighter, Isolde said.
He was volunteering for tough duty, Han knew. Zinj had well over a dozen destroyers up there to protect his nightcloak. A lone fighter didn't stand much of a chance, unless he could knock out some satellites and then run for hyperspace. Considering the firepower up there, whoever tried to take out those satellites would be committing suicide.
Should we draw straws? He asked Isolde.
Suddenly something shoved into his consciousness, as if an invisible hand had pushed through his skull. It was an odd sensation that left him feeling violated, dizzy. Very clearly an image formed in Han's mind. A vision of dozens of men and women in orange coveralls, standing in a well-lighted room. They were looking up, curiously, gazing around at walkways above them. On the walkways stood stormtroopers with blaster rifles.
General Solo,
Githzerian's voice crawled through his mind.
I hope you will find this amusing. As you see, I am here at the prison with dozens of your kind below me.
The stormtroopers fired into the crowd. Men and women screamed and scattered, but the gates back to the cell blocks had closed and they could not escape.
These 50 people are already dead. They have died because of your stubbornness. When my stormtroopers finish with them, I will round up 500 more just like them. Bring them to this room to die. But you can save them, General Solo. I will send a Night Sister to pick you up at the foot of the fortress in my personal hover car. If you are not there to meet her in 1 hour, then those 500 people will die. And you will have the privilege of watching.
Han, what's happening? He heard Leia saying as the vision faded.
It is a sending, Ogwin said. Githzerian is speaking to him.
Han turned and ran from the room, leaping blindly down the stairs.
Han, wait!
Leia called after him. She chased after Isolde following, and they caught up with Han on the field where the Falcon had set down. By then he was already down under the ship's right sensor fork, working with Chewie on mounting the last generator. When he saw Leia and Isolde, he said,
Isolde, I need your help. We've got to get this ship in good flying order and get out of here.
Go back to the fortress and get that sensor array window.
What are you doing? Leia asked. What's going on?
Githzerian just upped the ante on me, Han said. She's killing prisoners.
He rushed inside the Falcon and Leia followed him.
You can't do this, Leia said. You can't just walk in there. Zinj wants you dead.
Han went to his bunk and angrily pulled up a mattress, exposing a hidden weapons locker. It held a nasty assortment of laser rifles, blasters, old-fashioned slug throwers, even a portable laser cannon. Han reached under one of the rifles, pushed a button, and the bottom of the compartment rose, revealing a second hidden compartment filled with an odd assortment of grenades. Han grabbed a very small but very deadly brand, a Talesian thermal detonator.
This ought to do it.
Han tucked the detonator under his belt. Detonators like this were used only by terrorists, those who no longer valued their own lives. Han couldn't touch the thing off without killing himself. He pulled out his shirt so that it hung loosely over the detonator, concealing it.
Yeah, how does that look?
He asked calmly. Leia couldn't answer him. Her heart raced and she couldn't find her voice. She watched him through tears.
Hey, don't take it too hard. I figure if I play it smart, I can take out Githzerian and all her damn cronies with her. I'll have to leave it up to a soldier to do something about Zinj. He's a good man. You made a good choice, really.
Leia heard the words distantly and realized with a shock how strange they sounded. Then he bent down and kissed her fiercely, passionately, and the blood thundered in her ears. He broke away.
Han,
Leia began, but Han raised a finger.
Don't say anything. Don't make me regret this more than I already do.
Han went to Chewbacca, talked softly to the Wookiee for a moment, and gave him a hug.
Leia sat down at the console and began to sob. She could hear 3PO distraught, trying to talk Han out of it. Then Han returned, squeezed her hand goodbye.
"I've got to go now," he said.
He walked outside.
"Oh, Luke," Leia thought. "Luke, I need you."
A soft buzzing filled Luke's ears. His muscles relaxed like never before. He did not feel like he was dying so much as expanding. He could hear noises all around, minute digging sounds of some salamander scratching beneath the rocks, worms burrowing beneath his head, a bush scratching a rock as it tussled with the wind. Everywhere was life. Everywhere he could feel it, see the light of the Force glowing around him in the trees, in the rocks, in the warriors above him on the mountainside. The salamander raised its head above the soil, and it glowed with luminous force.
"Hello, my little friend," Luke thought.
The salamander had green skin and fierce little black eyes. It opened its mouth, and a white mist came out, stroked Luke as if it were a finger. And Luke understood that he was seeing the Force, not just feeling it.
"A gift," the lizard whispered. "This is a gift for you."
And the gentle light stole over him, reinforced Luke's waning force. Above him, the bush that scratched the rocks seemed to twist, and twigs of light bent down to cradle his head.
Here it is," the bush whispered. "Life."
A nearby rock glowed white, and on the distant plains one of the blue desert people raised its head as it fed in the rushes by the river, and its red eye stared across the leagues.
"Friend,"
it said, offering support. Luke lay for a long time with his eyes closed, unable to do more than breathe, and will for the Force to strengthen him. In the uppermost chamber of the fortress, Isolde found the sensor array window just where he had dropped it. He reached to pick up the window, heard a rustling in the corner, played his light in that direction, and pulled his blaster in one fluid move. It was Tenennial Dio, sitting in the darkness. Her cheeks were wet from crying. Even in the faint light, he could see the bruise on her cheek.
"The clan sisters all agree. I've killed in anger, violated my oaths," she said. "So now I must cleanse myself, or risk becoming a Night Sister. I'll be banished. At the end of 3 years, if I desire to come back, they will accept me."
He sat beside her, patted her back.
"Look, a Corellian stock light freighter like Hans can carry up to 6 passengers. That means there's an empty bunk, if you want it."
"But where would I go?"
"You could come to Hapes with me,"
Isolde said. And he knew, even as he said it, that he wanted nothing else. Tenennial nodded. She put her arms around his neck and kissed him. Some villagers found Luke, and they brought him to Leia at the Falcon. He opened his eyes, smiled weakly.
"Leia, I heard you call me. I..."
She didn't want to worry him, wanted only to let him rest.
I'm all right."
"No," Luke said, "you're not. Where did Han go?"
"He turned himself into Githarian," Leia said. "She was killing prisoners. He had to go. Zinj will be picking him up in 3 hours.
"No," Luke said, fighting to sit up. I must stop her. That's why I came here."
"You can't," Leia pushed him back down. "You're hurt. Rest now. Rest."
"Let me rest for 3 hours,"
Luke said, closing his eyes, breathing deeply.
"Wake me in 3 hours."
"Just sleep," Leia said. "I'll wake you." Luke's eyes snapped open.
"Don't lie to me. You have no intention of waking me."
Isolde came up from the front of the craft where he and Tenennial had been hurriedly trying to install the sensor array.
"Hey, friend," Isolde said. "Leia's right. Take it easy."
"I'll wake you," Leia promised. She thought desperately. Everything in her cried out that she should go to rescue Han, but they didn't have enough time. "R2, can you get a count on the Star Destroyers up there for me?" R2 hesitated a moment, then a hatch flipped open and the droid extended his sensor dish. 3PO translated.
"R2 reports that he cannot get a fix on any extraorbital objects through his sensors other than radio waves. Apparently, the orbital night cloak is blocking light at most wavelengths, even through the ultraviolet and infrared ranges. However, he can verify 26 sources of radio emissions, and he suspects from previous counts that 40 Star Destroyers are in orbit.
Isolde looked at Leia thoughtfully.
No wonder I can't fix the long-range scanners. There's nothing wrong with them. So as long as we fly under the orbital night cloak and maintain radio silence, we're effectively a cloaked ship.
Han found his heart hammering as he sat in the shadows on a hunk of rubble in an old spaceport hangar, guarded by two night sisters. He had been waiting for 2 hours for Gethsarian to appear. At the appointed time, a pair of stars appeared in the black sky, swept down toward the prison. The carriers extended their wings, then sledded in smoothly on antigrav and halted outside the tower.
One night sister hissed, "Come, General Solo."
Han got to his feet. Lights from the carriers played over him, blinding him. He walked slowly toward the lights, flanked by the two night sisters. He could not see the towers well. The ground was covered with Zinj's stormtroopers dressed in old Imperial armor. An officer descended from the ship, a tall general with glittering platinum fingernails, General Melvar. He came within arm's reach, studied Han's face momentarily. He placed one platinum fingernail under Han's eye as if to pluck it out, then raked a gash down Han's cheek.
"Hey, pal, don't be so hard on the merchandise. You might regret it." "Oh, I don't think I'll regret it," Melvar said. "In my work for Zinj, inflicting pain has become a cherished responsibility."
He hurried Han toward the gangplank for the carrier. They were halfway up the gangplank when Gethsarian shouted,
"Wait!"
General Melvar halted, glanced over his back. Gethsarian stood in the shadows at the base of her tower, flanked by a dozen night sisters. The old witch drew her robes up tight, stalked up to the carrier. Han surveyed the field. He'd surely take out the armed carrier with his detonator, along with General Melvar and Gethsarian, and at least a few night sisters. Gethsarian stopped at the foot of the gangplank.
"Sir, General Solo," she said, "you led me a merry chase. I hope you enjoyed your stay."
Han looked at the old woman and said smugly,
"I knew you wouldn't be able to resist coming to gloat. Why don't you gloat about this?"
He whipped out the thermal detonator and pushed the button. General Melvar lurched away, as did his guards. Melvar tripped over a stormtrooper behind him, and both men went down in a tangle. The detonator didn't go off. Han looked at it. The firing pin was broken.
"Having trouble with your explosive device?" Gethsarian smiled. "Sister Chabelle detected it before you ever boarded the hovercraft, and she dismantled it with a word."
She made a grasping gesture, and the detonator flew into her hand. She offered it to Melvar. Melvar got up, tried to recover his dignity, and took the detonator. "Thank you," he grunted.
And allow me to do you one more favor by giving you this."
Gethsarian's eyes opened wide, blazing, and she made a raking motion with her index finger. Beside Han, the general gasped, reached up to hold his temple, then staggered forward a pace.
"A simple death," Gethsarian cackled.
All around Han, 100 stormtroopers crumpled simultaneously, some of them staggering a step or two, some firing blaster rifles in the air so that Han instinctively ducked. Several night sisters rushed from their tower, pushed past Han, made their way up to the carrier, bringing dozens of Imperial prisoners with them to fly the ships.
"Now, General Solo, what shall I do with you?" Gethsarian asked.
"Hey, I have no quarrel with you," Han said. "In fact, if you'll remember, I spent most of the last several days trying to avoid you. Why don't you and I shake on it and just go our separate ways?"
Gethsarian stopped at the foot of the ramp, looked in his eyes, and laughed. She twitched her finger, and Han found himself with his feet dangling in the air, held by an invisible cord around his throat. Han choked, kicked, fought to break free.
"I wonder what your thermal detonator would have done to me. I suspect it would have blasted my flesh into scraps and broken my bones and fried me all at once. So I think I shall do all of these things to you. But not so hastily, not all at once. We'll begin with your leg. Listen carefully."
Gethsarian twitched her finger, and the tibia in his right leg made crackling sounds. A painful spasm worked its way up to his hip. "Ah!" he cried, and saw something over the desert. The running lights of the Millennium Falcon speeding toward them only meters above ground. Gethsarian smiled in satisfaction.
There, now, you have three bones where you had but one.
Suddenly there was a whooshing sound as the falcon fired its missiles. The bottom of the tower exploded, tossing black-robed witches into the air. Then the tower collapsed. Getzerian turned and Han dropped to the ground, released. A volley of blaster fire shot from the falcon's dorsal turrets with pinpoint accuracy. Getzerian leapt away from the ship and twisted just as another volley tore beneath her. The heavily armored guard droids on all six prison towers opened fire on the falcon, blasting with their cannons. The falcon rocketed over the prison, flipping in a complex quadruple spin that somehow managed to avoid all the incoming fire. Han had never seen anyone fly like that, not Chewie, not himself. Whoever was at the controls was an ace fighter pilot, and he guessed it must be Isolde. The falcon made a nearly impossibly tight roll a kilometer out and shot back over the prison, upside down, all guns blazing. Getzerian leapt up the gangplank of the Imperial ship faster than Han would have believed possible. The carrier's turbines whirred to life before the gangplank even raised, and the air around the ship took on a blue sheen as shields activated. Han crawled for it, moving across the yard as fast as he could with a broken leg. The falcon twisted around a hill, blasted a hole in the prison walls, and skidded to a halt 6 yards from Han. The bottom hatch flew open, and Leia shouted, "Come on! Come on!" Ogwin rushed down the hatch with two of her clan sisters, all three dressed in full helms and robes, and from the looks in their eyes, Han pitied the prison guards. He crawled for the falcon, and Isolde ran out, grabbed his shoulder, and half-carried Han into the ship. Han looked at Isolde, confused. Who's flying?
Luke, Leia said.
Luke, Han asked.
Luke's not that good.
Nobody's this good,
Isolde said, slapping Han on the back.
I've got to see this.
He ran back down the access tube to the control room. Leia stared hard into Han's eyes, grabbed his face, and kissed him. The ship jostled and swerved as Luke pulled maneuvers that even the accelerator compensators couldn't neutralize. Chewbacca's roar came from the cockpit, and Han limped there, holding onto Leia for support. He strapped himself into a seat, reached up, and grabbed the emergency med kit from the compartment above his head, and slapped a painkiller patch on his arm. Chewbacca, Isolde, and Daniel, and the droids were all there, watching Luke.
Who's up firing the blaster cannons?
Luke, Leia said. And Han looked down the hallway, confused. You could fire the blasters from the cockpit, but only with greatly reduced accuracy. Yet Luke had nearly taken Getzerian's head off, with Han less than a meter away, while piloting this hunk of junk at full attack speed. Luke sweated from the effort of flying the Falcon. Levers and buttons on Chewie's control panel seemed to take on a life of their own as he manipulated them with the Force. The Jedi was doing the work of three, pilot, co-pilot, gunner.
Give it up, Han said. They're too heavily shielded. You're just going to get my ship all busted.
And let these Night Sisters free on the galaxy? No way. Go on, Leia. Get on those quad cannons and open fire. Luke flipped on the radio jammers, sending out a storm of broadcast information. Han raised an eyebrow, wondering what Luke was up to. The witches certainly weren't going to try to call anyone, so the jammers served little function other than to warn everyone in the star system that a ship was there.
They're getting ready to jump to light speed, Han shouted,
and he looked at the view screen. Space was a flat black curtain, and the carrier accelerated into it. Not this close to the gravity well they aren't, Luke argued, and he accelerated behind. Then Han understood. Luke knew his blasters and missiles couldn't bring down the carrier's shields. He turned on the radio jammers because he was calling for Zinge. He wanted the Star Destroyers to know that the witches were hightailing it away, hoping to get enough altitude to make their jump into hyperspace. They accelerated into the blackness of the night cloak. Luke flipped off the jammers, and the Falcon followed the carrier into space, where thousands of stars glittered. Proximity indicators screamed in warning, and Han looked up, saw the slate-gray Vs of twin Star Destroyers converging ahead of them. Luke swerved to starboard, and a barrage of missiles ripped from the destroyers, puncturing the carrier's weakened shields. A plume of white-hot metal fragments burst from the carrier's right exhaust nacelle, and it erupted into a ball of flame. Luke accelerated wildly back toward Dathomir, back into the protective covering of the orbital night cloak. He flipped a switch and the cockpit flooded with radio chatter. The screens picked up the sources, plotted them on the head-up holo display. Han stared at the mess above them in dismay. The sky was full of ships. No matter which way they vectored, it would be a tight squeeze trying to make it out of the gravity well. Han swallowed.
What are you thinking, kid? What are you going to do?
Luke sighed, looked at the assembly of destroyers above them. We've got to bring down this night cloak. It's not just people down there. It's trees and grass and lizards and worms. Life. A whole living world.
What?
Han said.
You want to get your head blown off for a bunch of lizards and worms? Don't flip on me now, kid. Find a hole in their net and let's blast out of here.
No, Luke said, breathing heavily. The Jedi sat frozen in the pilot's seat, staring ahead in the smothering darkness. Han watched the targeting sights playing over the head-up holodisplay. Luke locked onto something and fired. Han couldn't see a target on the scopes, and he wondered if Luke was really hitting anything. Again and again, Luke repeated the tactic with no visible results. But the radio signatures were rapidly increasing in number, and Han realized that Zinj must have scrambled several hundred fighters. Apparently, Luke's efforts had begun to worry the general. And suddenly, Luke fired a salvo, and they came out of the blackness again, flying through the stars. It took a moment for Han to recognize that the orbital night cloak had shorted out, and Dathomir once again turned below them, a shining world of turquoise oceans and dark brown continents. Luke accelerated away from the planet. Han gasped as the holodisplay began reading the transponder signal showing the ships above them. There were hundreds of ships in the air. Imperial Star Destroyers and the rust-colored disks of Hapen Battle Dragons. TIE Fighters and X-Wings gyrated overhead in a deadly dance. Zinj hadn't just scrambled fighters. The whole Hapen fleet had jumped out of hyperspace. Luke accelerated to attack speed, glanced up at the view screen, and locked his sights on an enemy Star Destroyer that was besieged on either side by Hapen Battle Dragons. Han checked the holodisplay. Two other Imperial Destroyers were vectoring in, coming to the ship's rescue.
Who is on that Star Destroyer? Han asked, gazing at the highly protected ship.
Zinj, Luke answered softly.
That's the Sovereign. Give me the helm, kid, Han said, mouth dry. I want him.
Whatever you say, Your Majesty, Luke said, and got up from the pilot's seat.
Han sat down and breathed deeply. For the first time in months, he felt at home. Look, kid, Han said, flicking the stick so that he veered away from the Sovereign, heading on a collision course with the TIE Interceptor. I don't know any of your Jedi tricks, but the best way to get close to a Star Destroyer is to sort of mosey on in and try to act like you'd rather be any place but where you are. Han accelerated as if to attack, but hung back a good kilometer until he felt the Falcon shimmy. Tractor beams. Calmly, he accelerated toward the Sovereign, jiggling the stick so that even though the tractor beams were pulling them in, the Falcon presented a moving target. He dove through a bevy of TIE fighters, coming up on the Star Destroyer fast. Han looked to see which port the tractor beam was pulling him toward. He spotted it, waited until he figured he'd passed through the ship's particle shields, then fired two of his concussion missiles. The tractor beams pulled the missiles home. When they hit, an explosion blossomed on the Sovereign, and Han hit the decelerators and tried to hang onto the stick as he turned. He armed his last two missiles, then flipped his radio switch to standard Imperial frequency. Emergency message for Warlord Zinj of the Sovereign. Priority red, respond immediately. Do you copy? Priority red. I have an emergency message for Warlord Zinj. He waited for an eternity, weaving low through a maze of blaster turrets. At last, Zinj responded, and his face came up on the holo display.
This is Zinj?
This is General Han Solo. Han nudged the stick, and the Falcon rose toward the forward command module of the Sovereign. Look up at your view screen, you vermin. Kiss my Wookiee.
He waited half a second as Zinj looked out his view screen to see the Falcon hurtling toward him. Realization dawned on Zinj's face.
Han fired his last two concussion missiles. The top half of the Sovereign's forward command module disintegrated in a cascade of splintered metal. With its shields down, the destroyer became a sitting duck. A shot from a Hapen ion cannon bathed the Sovereign in blue lightning, and with its complex circuitry down, it fell victim to a hail of proton torpedoes. Han accelerated away from the dying ship out of orbit for a moment, content to leave any other dogfights to the Hapens. With Zinj gone, he figured it would only be a few moments before the Imperial fleet surrendered. Leia swiveled his seat around.
You won, she said, and her eyes were bright, full of tears.
The war?
Han wondered if she was just trying to make him feel good.
No, not hardly.
Not that. I bet. 7 days on Dathomir, you said that if I fell in love with you all over again, I had to marry you. The 7 days isn't over yet. You won.
Oh, that, look, that was a stupid bet. I would never force you to do anything like that. I release you from it.
Oh, yeah? Well, I don't release you. She kissed him. A long, slow kiss that seemed to penetrate every aching fiber of his being, making him whole.
Isolde watched Han and Leia. This whole episode would be a colossal embarrassment on Hapes. It wouldn't play well at all, and yet he felt happy for them. His comlink buzzed, and he pulled it from his belt, flipped it open, and Astarte appeared on the comlink's tiny screen. His bodyguard smiled in greeting.
"It's good to see you," Isolde said. "Yet I hadn't expected the fleet for 3 more days.
Once I fled Dathomir, I fed the Jedi's route to our ship's astrogators via the Holovid. The fleet was able to shave a few parsecs off their trip."
"An interesting gamble, but still it was dangerous."
"We did it on your mother's order. She's coming in with the Olanji fleet tomorrow. We've begun receiving surrenders from some of Zinji's vessels. Since you are temporarily in command of the fleet, what are your wishes?"
The soldier's mind did a little flip, stunned that his mother would take such a risk on his behalf.
"Accept only unconditional surrenders, and prepare to take any space-worthy Star Destroyers back to Hapes. As for the Imperial shipyard, destroy it."
"Yes, sir. How soon should we be ready to pull out?"
Isolde thought for a moment. Zinj might have sent for reinforcements. They'd have to get away from Dathomir as soon as possible.
2 days.
2 days?
Astarte obviously thought it was an extraordinarily slow retreat.
We will have to verify that with your mother.
There are political prisoners on the planet, along with several thousand locals who may wish to be evacuated. We will need to contact them, give them the opportunity to leave.
The following evening, the sisters from all 9 of Dathomir's clans gathered for a feast in the Hall of Warriors at Singing Mountain. The witches wore their finest helms and robes, but all their finery seemed drab compared to that of the Queen Mother, who wore lavender silks and decorated her hair with rainbow gems from Galanor. T'Achum seemed mildly annoyed by the proceedings and rested uneasily on the crude leather cushions. She kept swatting at insects, glancing toward the door distractedly, eager to get back to Hapes. Han watched her throughout the evening, appalled at her bad manners. At the height of the feast, Han formally presented Ogwin with the deed to Dathomir, and the old woman wept in gratitude, then had servants bring up the gold and gems she had collected and dump them onto the floor at Han's feet. Han stood amazed for a moment.
I forgot about that. Look, I don't really want all of this.
He gazed into Leia's eyes.
I've already got everything I want.
A bargain is a bargain, General Solo, Ogwin said. Besides, we owe you more than we can repay. Not only have you freed us from Zinj, but you helped destroy the Night Sisters. We will forever be in your debt.
I have an announcement that will also affect your people, Prince Isolde said from a cushion beside his mother, and he rose to his feet, reaching out his hand across the room. Tenenyul Dio, the granddaughter of Ogwin Dio, has consented to be my wife.
No! T'Achum stood up, glaring at her son. You can't marry a woman from this uncivilized little mud hole. I forbid it. She can't be the Queen Mother of Hapes. She's a princess with her own world to inherit, Isolde said. I think that is qualification enough. You have plenty of years left to sit on the throne, and in that time you can train her. You fool! Do you think I would consent to that?
No, Luke said from the back of the room, just as I'm sure that you never intended for him to marry Leia. Why don't you remove your veil and tell him who sent the assassins to dispose of her?
D'Achum's hands shook as she pulled the veil back. She fought Luke's command. I sent the assassins.
The soldier's eyes widened, and grief washed through him.
Why? You gave me your permission. You sent your gifts and your entourage. I did nothing in secret.
You asked for an alliance I could not approve of. You chose a dowryless pacifist from a democracy. Listen to her talk of her vaunted new republic. For 4,000 years, our family has ruled the Hapen Cluster. But you would turn Hapes over to her. And in a generation, her children would surrender control of the government, give it over to the rabble. You would rather murder someone than risk losing my allegiance?
Isolde exclaimed.
And my brother, was he too weak to rule? Is that it? Have you never intended to let anyone but you choose your successor?
T'Achum turned on him.
Keep your assumptions to yourself. Don't ponder things that you can't possibly understand. You are, after all, only a male.
I understand murder, said Isolde.
But T'Achum began picking her way through the crowd, heading for the door. Tenenyal took his elbow and said, "Let me reason with her." "To Achum," she said softly, and to Achum stopped as if Tenenyal had yanked her with an invisible cord. "Let me assure you that I am not a pacifist. In the past 2 days alone, I have killed several people. And if you ever try to harm me or mine, I will force you to publicly confess all your crimes, and then I will execute you." Before leaving Dathomir, Luke asked Ogwin to take him to see Mother Rell. "Mother Rell, it's me, Luke Skywalker," he said, and the old crone peered at him through rheumy eyes.
"What?"
she asked.
"Are the Night Sisters all dead? You killed them?"
"Yes." Mother Rell licked her lips.
"Then our world is ended, and a new one has begun, as Yoda foretold."
Luke found he was shaking with excitement.
"I suppose you have come for the records."
"Yes."
"We wanted them, you know, but the Jai would not give us the technology to read them. They said that the teachings were too powerful, and as long as there were Night Sisters on our world, we could not have them. Yoda promised that someday you would share them with our children."
She feebly got up from her seat, turned to the stone box she sat on, pulled off the cushion, and tried to open the lid.
"Help me,"
she said, and Luke heaved the box open. Inside was a metal locker, corroded, with an ancient access control panel on it. The green light on the box still shone. Luke studied the box and punched in two glyphs that spelled Yoda's name. A hissing noise erupted from the locker as the lid popped and air seeped in. The box was filled with reader discs. Hundreds of them, containing more volumes of information than any one person could hope to study in a lifetime. Six weeks later, under the blue skies of Coruscant, Luke, dressed in a fine gray robe, was late for Leia's wedding. He'd planned to arrive early, but then the shuttle driver dropped him at the Alderaanian Consulate by accident, a building which happened to be nearly 200 kilometers from the Alderaanian Consulate. So he found himself arriving at the consulate an hour later than he planned, and when he managed to get in the door, he raced down a long corridor toward the White Room. He turned a corner and found 3PO running frantically just ahead. Luke caught up with the droid and said, "Hey, 3PO, what's wrong?"
Oh, Master Luke, I'm so relieved to see you. I'm afraid I've gotten us all into a terrible mess. It's all my fault. We must stop the wedding immediately."
"What's wrong? What are you talking about?"
"I've just learned horrible news from the city computer. It was cross-verifying some files and found that Han isn't royalty after all."
"He's not?"
"No. His great-grandfather, Coral Solo, was only a pretender to the throne and got hanged for his crimes. We must warn everyone."
"So that's why he got so embarrassed and walked out on the Alderaanian Council when you announced his lineage," Luke said.
"Indeed," 3PO agreed. "Stop the wedding."
"All right, all right." Luke placed his hand on 3PO's shoulder. "Don't worry about it. I'll take care of everything."
"Oh, that's so good of you, Master Luke."
Luke flipped the droid off, dragged him into an empty office, locked the door, and hurried on. The White Room had an enormous vaulted ceiling, and brilliant lights reflected from the dome, bathing everything in a soft celestial glow. 1,000 guests from a variety of planets sat to witness, and some of them turned to look at Luke when he entered. In the front row, Tenenyal Dio and Princess Solda sat together next to R2 and Chewbacca. Luke stood at the back, watching Han and Leia as they knelt across from one another, holding hands across the marble altar. The officiator in his emerald robes of office was leading Leia in her vows. She turned and glanced at Luke, the diadem in her veil flashing in the light, and Luke could feel that she was not angry with him for having arrived late, only grateful that he had made it. And at that moment, Leia was more serene, more content than she had ever been in her life. And perhaps she was as filled with joy as anyone could be. This is Anthony Heald. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The Courtship of Princess Leia by Dave Wolverton. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel, abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Star Wars, The Courtship of Princess Leia is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1994, all rights reserved.
The book, The Courtship of Princess Leia, is available wherever Bantam books are sold.